The following podcast is brought to you exclusively by the Rad Rob Radio Network. Through the years, we all remember when we first witnessed a national tragedy.
Alabama wins!
We remember the good times and the bad times through either a song, a TV show, a monumental sports achievement.
For the first time in 86 years, the Red Sox have won baseball's world championship. Can you believe it?
Or even the smell of a particular food from when we were young.
To all beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions, and a sesame seed bun.
Welcome to the show that will take you on a journey through time to relive those iconic moments. Welcome to RTW Rewind, where old school rules. So, without any further delay, let's introduce you to the host of the show, Rad Rob, Rob Francois.
Hey guys, welcome back to RTW Rewind. This is day four of Rad Mania 4. 7 days of shows leading up until this weekend's WrestleMania 38 at AT&T Stadium in Dallas. I have a very special guest with us today. It is his third time on the show. He is a WWE legend and a wrestling legend in general. He is the president and CEO of the Cauliflower Alley Club, one half of the Killer Bees, B. Brian Blair. Good afternoon, sir. Thanks for coming back.
Rad Rob, man, what a pleasure it is to be on RTW Rewind. Not the first time, not the second time, but for the third time. And you are the hostess with the mostest. Thank you, brother.
That's a great intro. I appreciate that. So you're looking good. You're looking fit. I know you've had some injury issues and some surgeries. What's been going on since last we talked?
Wow, Rob. You know, so much. Golly, we talked last year, and last year was right just a few months ago. But in July, it started. I just had a really rough 2021. I mean, we all have rough times. We all have challenges. But this was more than I bargained for, actually. Buddy Colt, my trainer, one of my best friends of all time, you know, he actually killed himself, and I couldn't believe it. I was just with him the day before, and it's a long story, but Buddy's gone. So he died in March, and then along came July, and everybody knows how close that Paul Orndorff and I, everybody that follows wrestling, knows that Paul and I were just inseparable. You know, he was been like a brother to me, just for many years before I even got in the business. I used to sell sodas. If you've read my book, Truth Be Told, it goes into a lot of detail with Paul. But he passed away in July, and it just rocked my world, kind of. Even though I knew he was going to go, it's still hard to accept. But then my son got murdered, which was, I deal with that every single day, you know, for a wonderful 29-year-old. I have another son, Bradley, and he's a wonderful boy. And, right before I was going into the hospital on July 16th, the night of July 15th, he gave me a big hug and said he'd see me when I got out of back surgery. He wasn't there. I kept wondering where he was. And anyway, I just figured he was tied up with his girlfriend or something, and couldn't get him on the phone. But I contacted osteomyelitis, which is a it can either be a MRSA or a staphylococci infection. And I contacted in the hospital when my hemotube came out, and it's like a, there's some, after you have back surgery, they have a long tube and it goes to your back. And then it goes to this like thing that goes in and out, little plastic thing, because when it fills up with blood, they have to change it. You know, after the surgery, you're bleeding quite a bit. So after about 5 days, it pretty much stops. They take the tube out, and that's it. Well, I was in bed, and had to pee, and you know, you could get up. They get you up to actually the first day after back surgery to walk, and seemed like the surgery was great. I felt a little pop as I got up. No big deal. Walker was right there, and of course, you're always supposed to call the nurse to go to the bathroom. They like you to anyway, but nobody ever does that all the time. And if you, because you'd pee your pants because it takes so long to get service sometimes.
Right.
Especially when you're in pain, it feels like forever. You know, you'll press that button and, oh my God, you're laying there writhing in pain. But so anyway, I got up and I can't really remember if I went to the bathroom or didn't quite get there. I know I took a couple steps, and sometime in there I looked down and I saw blood everywhere on the floor, and it just freaked me out. I went, oh my gosh, it looked like somebody had been murdered, Rob. And I went and sat. I hate to say that. It looked like they had their, you know, a chicken with the head cut off. I sat on the bed, and I'm looking and I'm trying, I press the button right away, and I'm feeling around and trying to think what's bleeding on me. And the door opened. She actually came pretty quick. And the nurse, I think it was a nurse, could have been the tech they looked like. She says, you're Hemi. Well, first she looks and she goes, ah. So when she freaked out, for every reaction, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So I went out, and she goes, oh, no, it's your Hemi, it's your Hemi. And, you know, she's a Hispanic lady. And she said, here, sit still. And she grabbed the tube, and she's putting it back. She grabbed the tube off of the floor, and she's trying to stick it back in the hole, and it took her like, you know, 2-3 minutes, she gets it back in the hole. Well, now it won't stop bleeding. She called the doctor, and he came the next morning. The doctor's assistant, head assistant, and he put a big, biggest bandage I've ever seen on my back, and it still wouldn't stop bleeding. So they wound up taking the tube out earlier than it was scheduled, but he said it was safe enough to take it out. But the lady should have never stuck that tube in my back, because it caused me to actually not be able to walk. They had to take bone out of my back, rotten bone, because it kept eating it up. And I kept telling the doctor, man, I'm in pain. And it's just like, it kept blowing me up. Couldn't get a back brace, all kinds of problems. Had a lot of stuff on my mind too, obviously. But then I wound up being able to totally not walk. Zero. Could not walk at all. Called the ambulance, went into the hospital on October 29th. And on October 30th, Dr. Small did emergency surgery. And you know, I can now, I went from a wheelchair to a walker, and now I kind of wobble on a cane and fall down a lot, but going to therapy and working my butt off trying to get better. But you know, it just seems like I'm in a position where you know, I'm kind of at a sticking point, so trying to get my balance. So my brain's telling my lower body what to do, but it's not always doing it.
Right.
And so that's very difficult. But, you know, I have a lot to be thankful for. You know, it's kind of like the the guy that complained about his shoes and then looks next to him and sees a guy with no feet. You know, it's right. You know, everybody's got more problems and bigger problems and bigger challenges, but it certainly rocked my world. I kind of felt like Job for a while, you know, like, you know, my family and my health, you know, like God took everything away from Job, but then he gave it back, you know. So I have a lot of faith, and you know, the wrestling fans have been tremendous. I mean, absolutely wonderful. So much support, Rob. You know, it's so, what a great family. You know, wrestling fans are the best fans in the world. I mean, they support you, and I mean, they would literally give you money. I mean, I raise money for a charity, you know that. So, not the money thing. It's just, you know, the love of giving back, and I enjoy giving back, and it's great when you feel that same warmth on the other end. And so I just want to thank all the people that have prayed for me, and just thanks for having me on the show, Rob, to tell that story.
Well, I'm glad you're here, and that's a lot to unpack. That you know, you mentioned Job. I immediately thought the same thing right before you said that. And I was going to ask you, how's your faith been? Has it still been strong during everything you've had to endure the last year?
Oh, yeah, everything. And, you know, even when my son was murdered, as bad a pain, I had no idea why I was in such bad pain, because they hadn't discovered the osteomyelitis that had been eating my spine away since, like, the third day. It hits you fast. Like, within a few days, after that, I was like feeling pain that was way unusual, a pain that I've never had before, and a pain that got so intense that there is nothing that compares to that. I mean, I've had 20 surgeries, there's no pain that I've had anyway, like this, Rob. And, you know, they thought it was kidney stones, and I had been to the emergency room three times, or the third time they took me in, but the two other times, and no pain like that. But you know, you just get by, you get through it, and I'm here now and ready to roll.
So you have WrestleCon coming up here. You're leaving tomorrow as we're recording this. Actually, you and Brunzy are going to be doing some autograph signings and all that. Are you looking forward to that?
Yes, I really am. I'm a little afraid at the airport, but I'll get by. And it's the first time, you know, I did fly to, before the surgery, my first time since having the emergency surgery, I did fly to Las Vegas when I had the osteomyelitis, not knowing that I had it. And I wound up flying there normal and pain and coming back in a wheelchair. In excruciating pain. And I don't know how I made it home from that, but I did, thank God. And so this is like my first time out, and I feel, you know, a little bit of you know, nervousness, if you will.
Yeah. When's the last time you saw Jimmy?
God, it's been right before I would say May was the last time we were together. May or June.
So it'll be good to get you guys back together, the old team, still tried and true. And you guys get along well? Has there ever been any heat between you two along the years?
No. Jimmy and I have always gotten along great. Jimmy's a great guy. Now, Vince and Jimmy's a different story. But Vince and Jimmy, that's like oil and water. But I get along great with Jimmy. As a matter of fact, you know, we were together just with WWF, WWE for about 4 years, and we never got in arguments. If we felt like if we were getting too much of each other, we just go ride with somebody else, or, you know, change hotels or whatever, but we never got in arguments. Jimmy's easy to get along with.
He really is. He's a great guy. And I was going to try to surprise you and have him on here to watch the match with us today, but unfortunately he said he was busy, but, you know, he said, you know, he'll see you tomorrow. But yeah, that would have been kind of neat to have you two together to watch the match, but who knows, maybe some other time. But you mentioned your book, Truth Be Told, and I read it. It's amazing. I left you a great review on Amazon today, by the way.
You did?
There it is. Yes, I did. I wrote about three paragraphs putting you over. So
wow. Well, I appreciate that.
You are welcome. Fantastic book. Honestly, I mean, not blowing smoke up your butt, it's the best wrestling book I've ever read. And I've read pretty much all of them. And nobody goes into detail of accounts like you do. And it's a long book, but it's easily one of my favorites, or it is my favorite. And it's, even though there's a lot of pages, it's still very easy to read. How long did it take you to put all that together?
Almost 2 years.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And you know what, Rob? Every chapter could have been a book.
Right, yeah.
There's so much stuff that's not in that book.
Wow, really?
It would take 1,000 pages, literally. Yeah. It would take 1,000 pages. And Ian Douglas, who's fabulous, who co-wrote the book with me, he also did Bugsy McGraw's book, Brute Power, which is a tremendous book as well. Ian's mad, and he's a very, very sharp, sharp guy. And he was laughing, you know, about how much material there was, and you know, what do we put, you know, what do we keep, what do we not keep, and it was like eeny meeny miny mo. It was that close, because we had to narrow it down from like up like 600 pages down to, you know, 400 pages, and then it still got longer. And so anyway, I still have a lot of material for, even after you read the book, I have a lot of interesting things that have gone on, and met so many wonderful people in this business. It's provided a great time.
You've had a crazy life. You've lived more lives in one life than most people ever live in their lifetime. I mean, you've it's like being a rock star. You know, being a professional wrestler back in the 80s was huge. And the things that you went through and the things that you saw, it just blows my mind. I don't know how most of you, I mean, we have lost a lot of wrestlers over the years, which is unfortunate, but it's still amazing that you are able to get through everything you've been able, you've encountered. It's a fascinating read. And, there's one part I wanted to really touch on, and that was, you know, your WWE, WWF run. You had mentioned that, you know, a lot of your peers were, you know, the Hart Foundation, you know, Shawn Michaels, Marty Jannetty. You guys were just as good, if not better, than those guys. But for whatever reason, you never really got that big push. Why is that?
Because Bunzi, I mean, we were winning the belts three different times.
Yeah.
Promised. Ready to go. And you know, it's, you know, I didn't even know until, Rob, like 6 months ago, not 6 months ago, about 12 months ago, a year ago, Jimmy and I were doing a podcast, and Jimmy sued Vince before we were ever the Killer Bees, and he won. And it was a deal, well, I can't really talk about it, but it had to do with merchandise and the AWA. But Vince took over, and there were signatures forged. But so kind of had heat going in. And, you know, the killer Bees were actually formed. I was going to come back and work for the Intercontinental belt. That's what Vince Sr. wanted me to do. And because I had enjoyed the WWF territory first when Vince Sr. was there, and Junior was the announcer, and was there a couple times, and really enjoyed my time. And then Hulkster called up and said, "Hey, I knew you weren't planning on coming back as a tag, but I was talking with Vince, and this is when Vince was cherry plucking everybody from the territories that were on top." Yeah. So here I'm on top working with Ravishing Rick Rude, and we're selling out all over. But I'm on my notice. Well, this is right before I'm on my notice. Yeah. I'm getting ahead of myself. Terry says, "Do you know Jumpin' Jim Brunzell?" And I said, "Heard of him, you know, through the magazines and stuff." And I heard he's, you know, great guy, good worker, da da da. So he said, "Well, Vince would like to, he's creating a real tag team division, and he wants you guys to be a tag team. And I said, well, that's interesting. And so I got up, you know, made sure we were going to, of course, be the champions, or I didn't want to waste my time there. Right. Of course, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, everybody knows the story. You've read the story about in Canada, we became the Killer Bees. And that clicked. And God, at one time, we were the hottest tag team on the planet.
Yeah.
I mean, we were the hottest team on the planet. And babyface team, you know, the Hart Foundation were the hottest heel team. And, you know, you can only stay there. You know, the fans keep, it's okay to get screwed here and screwed there. But eventually you need to win the titles, you know, for the fans to get that firm foundation and know that, you know, on any given day that you're going to win those titles.
Right.
I mean, you can win so many, non-title matches and DQs and things like that, but you gotta I mean, we beat the Hart Foundation plenty of times in the middle of the ring and Demolition, everybody else, but we just didn't get those belts. And George Scott was the booker then, and he used to promise us, yeah, I mean, it's coming, you're gonna win the tag team belts. I mean, there was perfect setups right after we won the Royal Rumble with Jimmy Powers and Paul Roma.
Yeah.
Would have been a perfect time to turn his heel and give us the belts, but you know, that's, they didn't do what they could have done. And we're actually in the top 10, and it's actually put out by WWE, wasted talent, the talents that they didn't book properly.
Funny that they mentioned that all these years later. It would have been nice if they took care of you, you know, the first time around. Were they trying to appease you? I mean, do you really think maybe the heat with Brunzy and Junior were just too much to encounter, and Vince just kind of told, you know, just appease them and try to make them happy? But did you ever really find out why?
No, they just never said why.
Yeah.
We'd ask and they'd always say, well, the money's in the hunt. You know, you got to chase. That's, you know, look at the popularity, look how much merchandise you're selling.
Yeah.
This, that, and the other. There's always excuses. And I remember when the shirts right off of my right shoulder, the Killer Bee shirts, t-shirts, yeah. Vince comes out with these t-shirts and he's so excited, you know, and he shows us these t-shirts and I'm looking at him, well, Vince is so excited, I gotta be excited too. I said, wow, those are awesome. Yeah, those are great. And I'm still trying to figure out what they are. and it is good once you really look at it, but Jimmy goes, that sucks. you know, I mean, just stuff like that.
So I think we know why you didn't get the titles. It's Jimmy's fault. Yeah.
Jimmy's honest, you know, but
he is.
Sometimes at the wrong time.
Yeah. That's unfortunate. Well, look, I mean, you guys still had a really good run. You got to work, you know, the best tag teams that they had. And what a division back then. You guys were just kind of at the forefront of that with the Hart Foundation, Demolition, the Rougeaux. The Rockers were just starting to come in, the Young Stallions. You know, later on they had the Powers of Pain. So, I mean, tag team.
Haku and Barbarian.
Yeah, I mean, the tag team in the 80s were unbelievable. The Islanders, I mean, there was just a lot of great tag teams that came through. And you guys left, what, right before WrestleMania 5, was it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Were you supposed to work that event?
Yes. Yes.
What happened there?
I just gave my notice. I was just, you know, Rob, I got so fed up with the, we had worked 67 days in a row about 3 months before that, a few months before that, and I was getting burnout. I have a business background and just wanted to do my own thing. I was tired of I would have stayed. You know, Vince asked me to stay in Salisbury, Maryland. I just pulled him aside. I said, Vince, I gotta give you my notice. He said, oh, why? I said, well, first we promised the belts 3 times. We haven't got the belts. I can see the writing on the wall. You know, you're starting to job Brunzy out. You know, it's just time to leave. You know, too many days on the road. You know, watch my partner cry over missing his two young children's. I didn't have children at that time. And Jimmy's in tears over missing this graduation or whatever, from, you know, elementary school to just the little things. And him and Mary would talk. I remember, you know, we were in Australia and my grandfather died, and God, my grandfather and I were so tight. You know, that really tore me up. And so that was kind of a bittersweet trip. It was a great trip, but I had to fly to Chicago right from Australia to go to my grandfather's funeral. And it wasn't long after that, you know, I don't know, I stayed maybe another year. When was the Australia tour? 86, 87, right? 87, I think.
87, 88, somewhere around there. I can't.
Maybe 88. Yeah, 88. But, you know, we were on the first Australia, first European tour, the first World Rumble, the first Survivor Series, yep. WrestleMania 2, WrestleMania 3, WrestleMania 4. And, you know, could have stayed longer. It was just, I have no regrets about leaving. We got started at Gold's Gems, and
right.
That was a fabulous deal for my family and I, and all of my employees, and Steve Kern,
yeah,
who owned 25% of my Tampa Palms facility.
You want to talk about a guy that's underrated? That's Steve Kern. I mean, he had a fantastic career. Obviously, we know what he did in WWE. It's Skinner, and they kind of made him a gimmick, but man,
yeah,
that dude was so smooth in the ring. Such great hand.
You know? He was really smooth, and you know, Steve has actually trained more people that made money in this business than any other person alive today.
Yeah.
Nobody has trained more.
That's people. Incredible. Yeah. I mean, who better to learn from, too? I mean, just another guy that's been there and seen it all and done it all. Maybe not always got the recognition he deserved, but right. Still has the respect from everybody that ever, you know, either encountered with him or worked with him. Nobody's ever really had a bad word to say about him. Just a great guy.
No, he's a great ribster, too.
Yeah.
he's pulled some fabulous ribs.
Yes. So. And you have, too, as well. And I didn't really see you as a jokester, but, yeah, you had some great ribs that you put in the books. Never said anything mean. I mean, you never ribbed on the square, but, you know, guys like you, obviously Kurt Hennig is always another one that people want to bring up, or Owen Hart. Just amazing, just funny. Fuji too, yes, Fuji.
He was a master ribber.
Right. Just amazing ribs. Fun stories. And most people don't like to share them, but you were pretty candid about your career, which I got to give you credit for. A lot of people are looking for another run, or they don't want to upset the office, you know, just in case. But you, it really is a truth be told. You didn't hold anything back.
No, and everything in there is verified, so... You know, you can go look up the matches. It's a real. I had somebody that sent me an email, and they weren't a wrestling fan, really. They knew me from the county commission, mm-hmm. and was a political junkie. But they decided to buy the book because it said something about politics. And he called me up and he said, you know, that was the best book. He goes, I'm watching wrestling. I'm just started watching wrestling again since I finished your book, and I hadn't watched wrestling in 20 years. And I only did just to make my grandfather happy, and my grandfather and my dad. Then my grandfather died. I stopped watching wrestling. Never thought another thing about it. And he said, this was just an amazing story. And I was really appreciative for somebody that wasn't a wrestling fan to really like it.
Absolutely. That is really cool. And I haven't seen a bad review yet. Any reviews I've looked up about your book, you know, you have mostly 5-star reviews on Amazon. A couple of people blogged about how great your book was. It's got really great success. Even the Wrestling Observer called it, you know, one of the best books of the year, I guess.
Yes, yes, yeah. We actually won that award.
Oh, you did good.
We got the seal. No, we didn't win. We were finalists in the finalists. The book by Mox. You know, Mox is on TV. You know, constantly John Moxley, and I haven't read the book yet. I'm sure it's a good book, but you know, he has such a huge following.
Yeah,
it goes by both.
Yeah, so, true.
Hard when you're not on TV all the time, you know.
But hey, for you to be able to compete with the guy who's, you know, relevant today for this generation, like Mox, that's a pretty big deal. I mean, people still remember the Killer Bees and look fondly upon them. And again, it's just a really well written book with great stories.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. It's available on Amazon at $24.95.
That's right. So let's watch the match between you and Jimmy taking on the Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkov from WrestleMania 3. Now, to set this up, I know we've kind of just brushed on it before, and you've talked about it in the book, but did you ever have a chance to just kind of take it all in beforehand? I mean, looking at the crowd, how huge it was. Did you realize how big of a moment that was?
Not so much at the time. You know, Rob, I remember going up way up in the press area, and I looked down and I thought, I was looking at the ring crew, and then I couldn't recognize guys that I knew that put up the ring. You know, I said, wow, why would you want to sit up here? You can't even tell who's who, you know. Yeah. I guess you will be able to with their outfits on, but, and then they had the Jumbotron, right?
Yeah.
So, but, and until we came out in that modified golf cart, in a modified pair of underwear in front of 90 something thousand screaming fans, you could just, the electricity was so thick. I mean, it was so heavy, and it was like it would take a knife to cut the sound, the vibration, the feeling, the enthusiasm of that many fans in one building. And it was incredible. And you know, think about, you know, all the people watching on pay-per-view, then, you know, so many people buy the tape when it's over, or they watch the second, you know, it gets cheaper as you go along.
Right.
And now you can watch it for free. So, you know, there's no telling how many times that's been watched. So, but no, to answer your question, no, I had no idea of the magnitude.
It is truly remarkable that WWE was so hot, WWF was so hot at that time, to where they could put 93,163 people in. Well, depends who you ask. Meltzer says it was less, but I still believe it was somewhere around 85,000 to 90,000 people. But to be able to put that many people in a building just shows you how strong the brand was. And obviously Hogan and Andre was the biggest match of all time at that point. Sure. But you still had all the players that like you guys and everybody else were in the middle. You know, you guys went after Savage and Steamboat. I mean, you had a pretty good spot in the card. You went after the Hearts. You were towards
right before the main event.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's right. A big deal to kind of set the stage for them. But, you know, it's a match that still holds up to this day. I don't care what anybody says. I think my era and your era of wrestling is not the way it is now, and which is unfortunate. You know, I wish people would use psychology more. I wish people would sell a little bit more and stop worrying about their next spot. Do you watch anything current at all?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Real quick,
I can teach those guys to do half of what they do and get twice as much out of the match,
right?
Even in today's world.
Yeah,
even in today's world. But they're just programmed, and that's the way it is. And Vince wanted that because there's so much money in merchandising and video games and stuff. So it's almost like it's closer to the video game when you have lots and lots of high spots. Does that make sense?
Yes, no, that makes perfect sense.
Yes.
And obviously it's a different generation of fans too. You know, they're expected the instant gratification with the smartphones and the computers, and you have to have a fast-paced you know, style of wrestling to kind of keep their attention. Was that fair to say?
Absolutely, yeah. It's, well, you know, they've been programmed over the years to accept this new product. And it is much faster pace. And, you know, unfortunately, the bar started being raised. You know, Mick Foley was always doing crazy high spots. You know, I love Mick. He's a great guy, super guy. But he would do some stuff that would just, Mick, golly, you're going to be 60 someday, hopefully. Yep. And that's what I'm afraid of with the younger talent now, Rob, is that, you know, these guys, you know, when they get to be my age, they're going to be hurting.
Yeah.
Believe me, they're going to be hurting. Your body just cannot take that. We're not supermen. You know, I used to pray to be Superman and Superman, right. And I'd go speak at schools and show them a tape and tell the kids, you know, hey, you know, I didn't wear I didn't have a big S on my chest, you know, I didn't have a cape, but I could leapfrog a man with a single bound. I could hit the ropes like a speeding bullet. I could have a 300-pound guy jump on me, and I'm here to talk to you guys today. I just had a different color outfit on. But God did make me Superman as close as he could, you know, yeah. When I prayed.
You're right.
So, God answered my prayer, and it's amazing. I don't know what closer thing do you have to Superman. So
that's true. But I mean, look at Hogan, you know, dropping a leg for 20 years, just a simple move like that, and how many back issues he had. You know, you guys weren't going through tables and ladders and chairs and all that. And look, you know, look what happened to you guys. I can't imagine, like you said, what's going to happen to them when they're in their 40s, 50s, and 60s. It's just,
yes,
it's ridiculous. Even the women, too. See, that's what really worries me, is these, you know, 100, 115-pound women that do the same thing now in WWE. They do the Elimination Chamber. They do the Money in the Bank. They do the TLCs. Their bodies aren't meant to take all that.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. It's scary. Right, it's scary to watch. You
know, a lot less padding.
Yeah, absolutely.
Protect the skeletal system.
Yeah.
Muscles.
You think they would learn from the old-timers, right? But
you'd think, but it, you know, when there you have a bunch of thousands and thousands of screaming fans, you know, your adrenaline's so high, it's amazing the pain that you can take.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't bother you.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, if you just, if somebody just comes up to you and slams you, you're going to be crying. You know, but when you're in the middle of the match and you're expecting it and you're ready and everything's right, the moment's right, you get slammed 10 times, you know, you don't feel a thing. You just keep going. And there's going to be some hurting people, unfortunately.
Do you ever think back in the day, I mean, you know, a drop kick off the top was a crazy high spot. And then you look at a guy like Jeff Hardy, who's doing, you know, swantons off of balconies and stuff like that. Like, it's just a completely different business. But, you know, it just shows you how they had to just keep raising the bar. Like I said, raising the bar. How can you top this? I'm worried somebody's just going to die in the ring, you know, one of these days, unfortunately, because they need to keep trying to top themselves. And it's just, it's a dangerous thing. It really is. Mm-hmm. Any event. Get off my soapbox. Let me pull this match up here. If you guys want to watch along with us here, it is on Peacock. The timestamp is 2:20:45. There we go. Nope, I'll get it right one of these days. Nope, that's not it. There we go. 2:20:45 is the timestamp. I'm old. I'm technologically deficient. 2:20:45 on the WWE Network. I'm going to give it a countdown, and then we'll all watch it together. So we can start the video in 3, 2, 1, play. I miss Howard Finkel. I really do.
Oh, me too. I love that line.
Jesse and Gorilla really knew how to set the stage for everything too.
Yeah, yep. They were good.
Did you ever have any interactions with Jesse? Any heat between you two, or
do you guys? No, I get along great with Jesse. I just haven't seen him in a while.
Yeah,
probably 3 years.
Such a great heel.
Yes. Oh. Well, you read the book. Yeah, you know, we were with each other day in and day out in Kansas City territory for a long time.
Yeah.
Seemed like forever.
Old Cosro, not a big fan of you, I've heard.
Yeah, I need to get by and see him in Atlanta. You know, this these guys could get so much heat, which you'll see in the match. They just had heat right off the bat, you know, singing the Russian national anthem and she's doing the 444-day Flicks mouthpiece. I mean, these guys were tremendous at getting heat. But it was so difficult because you had to shoot with them to give them a bump. I mean, it was like a total shoot. And then they'd take a bump in three stages. You know, you watch, say, Junkyard Dog and Paul Orndorff, for example. Junkyard Dog had never moved. Paul Orndorff was constantly feeding them, boom, bang, boom. And then, anyway, now this would really get heat today.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. It's funny how it comes full circle, you know, 30 years later, where, you know, Rush is the bad guy again.
Yeah.
Old Hacksaw. Really. I love Hacksaw.
So basically, what this match did was it really got Hacksaw over.
Yep.
That part is smart, but they wasted the opportunity for Jimmy and I. Usually there's a tag team title match. I think this is only WrestleMania without a tag team title match. You know, it would have been great to have the belts on. They should have reprogrammed this to have the belts on Nikolai and Sheik and let the bees go over.
Yeah, I agree. No, I agree. You think they should have put this spot after the match, or?
Yes, absolutely.
Because I mean, he's taking the forefront away from you guys, really.
Right. He's killing the match right there.
Yeah, I mean, if he didn't run in after the fact, I think it would have had a different effect.
It would have had a much better effect.
Yeah.
Look at us. We didn't know that that was going to take place at the beginning.
Oh, really? Oh, well, that sucks.
No.
Look at those good-looking guys.
And it was, you know, I was pretty pissed about that.
I don't blame you. Yeah, I don't blame you at all. All the trash in the ring. Yeah, I mean, they definitely got some heat.
Oh, yeah.
Man, I love those jackets.
I still have all three of mine.
No kidding. That's cool.
I still have my tennis shoes. I have everything just about.
Nice.
I sold a few pair of tights. But people are always trying to buy that ring worn.
So you were alluding to it earlier. Cosro and Koloff, do they work pretty snug?
Well, it's not that they're just, you can watch them. You know, they're robotic. They're just like two robots. You know, Nikolai's a big guy, and the Sheik is a big guy too, and they're just not agile. Although that was pretty nice for him. Nikolai can bob the head pretty good. that's like the biggest bump I've ever seen Nikolai take. And you know, the Sheik, it's like a Sheik. Jimmy was just straining his back to get him up. He does not go up. So I mean, that's like a shoot to get him up.
I gotcha.
That's what I'm talking about. You know, you've and when they take a pump, it's like Sheik went straight down, but if you watch Nikolai the next time, watch him, he'll go to his knee, then his side, then his elbow, then his back. Four stage pump.
Were you ever jealous of Jimmy's dropkick because you couldn't jump that high?
Oh, no, not at all. I was in deep admiration of it. Amazing. I would always make sure that we got that spot, you know, in the match.
Yeah.
You know, his dropkick was the best in the business.
It was.
There's a lot of guys. I mean, Kevin Von Erich had a great dropkick. A lot of guys. But something about Jimmy, you know, he was a high-jumping champion.
Exactly, yeah.
And look how long his legs are.
True, that's true.
I've actually seen a photo of Jimmy, and it was with Joey Borella, God bless him, that his feet were higher than Joey's head.
Oof, wow. Yeah, that's amazing. Right on the chaw, too. I mean, and just never hurt anybody either. I mean, he's such a good safe worker. Yeah, that dropkick is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Look at the trash still in the ring. I mean, just the heat that those guys had.
Oh, unbelievable.
Do you ever wonder why Nikolai never really got a bigger push?
You know, Joe was always in a relevant spot. I believe that he had a push earlier with Vince Sr. You know, it was probably because of the difficulty in getting the most out of the match with Nikolai. It's hard to explain, even with everybody being smart now, but it's like you got this big guy that's has a great gimmick, but something about his bumps and not wanting to take a bump, and you know, it's so hard to have a match when you work with somebody like that.
Right. And obviously, you know, promos are a big deal too, and you know, not be able to talk, you know, speak English that well, kind of hurts people, especially in Vince's mind. Vince has never really been high on guys that can't talk.
Yeah. See how I'm working the apron?
Yeah.
I can't stand when a tag team, you're a team, when the other guy just stands in the corner and watches the match.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to be, it's got to be like you're in there. You have to really want to, you got to cheer for your partner. And, you know, just be in that ring with him, even though you're not.
Right.
Got to show the people that you're struggling when he's struggling, you're hurting when he's hurting. It's just a little thing that guys could improve on. That's all.
No, I agree. And I mean, you really have to register to the people that, you know, this is a big deal. And you want to get in there and help your guy. And, you know, you're with them in every single move. And you got to sell. And especially it's babyface.
Exactly. You see Cosgro with those abs. He was drinking probably 18 Heinekens a day then. Still had the abs.
That's amazing. So that's a famous moment, obviously. And, you know, get you a finish like that where you guys really don't get over clean. The focus is on Hacksaw. So you had no idea that was even going to happen? You didn't know? I mean, did they explain the finish to you at all?
No, we knew the end. Yeah, we knew he was going to be in there. We knew that he was going to come down to the ring. But the focus was supposed to be on the two teams, just like it was. And all of a sudden, bam, boom, there goes. Might as well just be a Hacksaw handicap match, Hacksaw against the Sheik and Volkov at that point.
Yeah, I wonder whose call it was to make him run down before the match, because like we mentioned at the outset, the finish is fine if he doesn't come out in the beginning. Yeah, Scott made that up. Yeah, okay. Yeah, it would have been a lot different if he came back, if he did the run in at the end and not the beginning, which is, that's unfortunate. But it was a great match, though. I mean, you guys got great heat. The fans loved it. You guys sold your butts off, and, you know, you were a very popular team. So I still enjoy it for what it is.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it was a great time. I mean, to come out again in front of that many people and, you know, perform, you know, in a, like I said, a modified pair of underwear, you know, you got to be in your best shape, or at least you want to be, and you don't want to mess up. And So there's a lot of pressure on you to perform. And I think we made the most of what we had to work with that day. You know, I mean, it changes your whole mindset when all of a sudden you see somebody that's really not supposed to be in the match. They're having the match with your opponents, beating them up before it even starts.
Yeah.
So, you're sometimes at the mercy of the pencil, is the way we'd call it.
That's exactly right. But, hey, at least you guys still got on the card. I mean, you had the worldwide audience watching you. You had all the people there. And I'm pretty sure you got a decent payday from it. So, I mean, it could have been worse, right?
Great payday. It was all good.
Yeah.
No, that was it. You know, it was great. I mean, at that time, you know, Rob, you couldn't go on airplanes. You couldn't go anywhere without people just, you know, grabbing you. It was a great time. It's when wrestling became, WrestleMania 3 was really when wrestling broke out in mainstream, because, you know, we had, Vince was very smart about bringing in the entertainers, Cyndi Lauper, The Rock and Wrestling, Hulkster was on fire, obviously. And it's just, it all culminated then to what it is now, where, you know, everybody, every movie star, athlete, they all want to be, they all think they can wrestle, you know, or right. They all want to be. It's like the main thing. I mean, people were, you know, when Will Smith just, slapped the comedian
Chris Rock.
You know, a lot of people were, was that WWE, you know, were they working?
Could have been, you never know. I mean, show business is show business, you never know. So let's talk about the Cauliflower Alley Club real quick here. You are obviously the president and the CEO. The work that you guys do to help wrestlers in need and families that are in need too, it's just tremendous. It, you know, because there's no unions, there's no insurance. I mean, and you guys help give back. So it's a great thing. Do you have a gathering planned yet this year?
Yes, we do. We'll be. You can join the CAC, the Cauliflower Alley Club, for $25. That rate's going up pretty soon. I'm not sure what it's going to, $35, $50, but because it's, we're actually now, because of the cost of paper, because with your membership you get 4 copies of the newsletter, which is a 20-page, 4-color newsletter. We mail 4 of those out a year. That alone is $25, and. Beautiful membership certificate. Then you get to go to our reunions we have once a year. If you go to caulifloweralleyclub.org, you can learn all about it. But we'll be in Las Vegas at a new venue that we haven't been before, downtown, which is supposed to be a blast. They just spent $75 million 2 years ago renovating downtown. And we're at a newly renovated hotel, the Plaza Hotel and Casino. Mm-hmm. Room nights are $39. A reunion ticket's $150, which includes all the things that we have to offer, including 2 awesome dinners. You can't beat that. And you can usually, airfare is especially now real cheap. So the 26th, 27th, and 28th are the official days of the reunion, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
And what month? I'm sorry.
September.
September. Okay. Yeah, I actually like to make that trip. I've never been to one. And I do have friends out in Vegas, so maybe I'll try to make the trip this year.
CauliflowerAlleyClub.org. It's the greatest organization. If you're a wrestling fan, it's the greatest organization you can join.
It really is. Real quick, you mentioned seeing Hulk Hogan way back in the day playing in a band. Did you ever think that he would have reached the heights that he did and bring the business to what it was?
No, because nobody could ever foresee that, but I knew that he was going to be a star. Yeah. I could just tell he was, because he was a star already. I mean, just being, you know, a 6'7", long blonde haired suntan muscle guy was with a guitar, big bass guitar in his hand, which looked little because he was so big. Yeah. You know, people would go watch Ruckus. That was the name of his band. And I snuck in when I was 17 years old to watch him play at a place called The Other Place. Drinking age was 18 then, so I went to see him a lot. And Then when we wound up in the ring together at 106 North Albany Street, getting stretched by Matsuda, oh, it was great. We had such good times, and I left before he did to go to my first territory, and it was like two brothers hugging and saying goodbye. Paul had already started, so I was going to meet Paul in Bill Watts' territory, and so many fun times. I cannot even say it, but I still see Terry all the time. On Monday nights now, he has karaoke at his at Hogan's Beach Club. And
I saw that.
Did you see that? Yeah, we were there with Flair. We had a good time a few Mondays ago.
Was Terry the right guy at the right time?
Absolutely. Terry's the guy. I don't care who says what. Terry was the magic bullet that really, and Vince knew that. Vince has morphed with technology. If you watch WWE or NXT, and now even AEW, the show is produced so well. The lighting, everything is first class. It's everything is Hollywood. I mean, as Hollywood as it gets. And, that if you would have taken that production of today and put it back then, you just would have gotten there a lot quicker.
Yeah. Yeah. That's absolutely right. People always ask who made who? Did Vince make Hogan? Did Hogan make Vince? Did they both make WWE what it was? Who should take credit for that? Is it just a team effort?
It's a team effort, but I would say the most important piece of the most important talent was obviously Hogan.
Right.
Vince was the most relevant promoter because he had the vision. It was actually his dad's vision. And I was actually in Atlanta, and they were seeing what we were doing in Atlanta, and we started using the TBS cable to go into, before people had respect for each other's territories and they wouldn't go in there. Right. But Eddie Farhat, who used to run Ohio, he wasn't running like Columbus and some of the other places, and so we started going into there. It was just, Dayton at the Ohio Center. That place was sold out every time, and the roof would blast off, You are filming in Atlanta going, all the way to Ohio, and then just wherever you went, it was amazing. That was the real breakout for wrestling and cable television. So it was a combination of having cable television where you could not only go into the potential of going into almost every household in America, but you could also from the Skynet go into 100, and that time I believe it was 160 countries.
Yeah,
even though there's like 192 countries, 197 countries. It allowed guys like the Killer Bees to have a continued run, because we got so big from the television production. I mean, we were going to Singapore, Malaysia, all over Aruba, Bonaire, Curacao, all over Italy, everywhere. And it was just like we came off the WWF TV.
Right, yeah.
TV. And then UWF formed. That was a good run. And then the best hidden secret was the IWA with Tom Schade, and we became Brunzell and I eventually became the world tag team title holders with UWF, and then I became the world heavyweight champion with the IWA, which ran all sold shows on the weekends. So you'd work 2 days on the weekends. It was either at a military base, at a casino, at an Indian reservation, primarily military bases, though, and those crowds were live. And so, you had just a steady cast of characters that, it was always new wherever we went. And so, Easy Ed Waskowski Derek Draper. Ed's been a lot of different gimmicks, but he's still Ed Wiskowski, and he's a tremendous worker, very underrated worker. And him and I would just go tear the freaking houses down. I mean, it was like the crowds in a smaller capacity were like WrestleMania 3 every single time. And they weren't even watching TV. They knew you just from TV, and they were just glad to be there. It was a promotion where they didn't have to pay. It was taxpayer money, I guess, from the bases or tribal money at the casinos and the Indian reservations. So, you know, people were there, and they were excited. I did that for a year. I mean, every weekend. I'm, you know, banking every weekend, and started Gold's Gym. And, you know, I'm glad I left when I did. Right. I really am. The only regret I have is not winning the tag team titles.
That's it. Yeah, I mean, which is obviously out of your hands. I mean, that's, you know, you guys did everything you could to put yourselves in that position.
No.
But, yeah, it's unfortunate. But, I mean, you really, you got to work every territory, you know, pretty much at its highest times, to be honest. I mean, you know, and you're always, you know, at the forefront. You and Jimmy were just fantastic athletes, great look, great charisma. People really dug you, so you can hang your hat on that. You know, I mean, just you got over, so that's hard to do.
Yeah, it's just you know, it's again, go back to the fans. You know, without the fans, it'd be nothing. And look how many livings, how many people make a living now or a side living, let's say, from the wrestling business because it's gotten so big. I mean, you know, if you look at Dave Meltzer's net worth, it's like $122 million, and he never wore a pair of tights from the wrestling industry.
It's amazing. It is amazing. Yes. Well, as always, Brian, I appreciate you being here. Always fun to talk to you. You know, just being able to sit under the learning tree and hear stories from you. Or, again, guys, read the book, Truth Be Told, available on Amazon. It's, again, it's an amazing read. I guarantee if you read it, you will enjoy it. It's that good of a book. So thank you for giving me time.
I promise you, Bob, if anybody buys the book from this show that saw this, if they don't like it, they can write to you, or email me if they have my email address, and I'll give them twice their money back.
Well, there you go. There you go. That's a promise.
That's a fact. I will do that. I promise.
All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed this episode of RTW Rewind. Again, day 4 of Radmania. Tomorrow we have John Paz from the 2-Man Power Trip coming up, talking about WrestleMania 5. And, of course, we have the big festivity this weekend. You looking forward to WrestleMania?
Oh, yes, I am. I'm looking forward to WrestleMania. I'm looking forward to seeing all my old buddies and my new young buddies. You know, that's one thing that's great is the respect in the locker room never stops. I mean, it's whether it's John Cena or Dwayne Johnson or whoever, you know, it's like we're all buddies, and it's just great the way that people have been. And that's part of what Steve Kern would do, you know, respect your elders. And that's how we were broke in. You know, you respect your, you know, the guys before you that blazed the trail, because you wouldn't have a place to work if it wasn't for them. So they realize that, most of them. And it's great. I am truly looking forward to seeing them, Rob. I look forward to seeing you when you come to the Tampa area. And, man, just keep up the great work with the show.
I appreciate that. And guys, we'll be back tomorrow for day 5 of Radmania 4. Until then, we'll see you next time.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of RTW Rewind. For all the latest news and announcements, please follow us on Twitter at RTW Brand. You can also follow Rad Rob at Rad Rob Gaming. You've been listening to RTW Rewind, exclusively here on the Rad Rob Radio Network.